Radhamadava Kunjabihari. Radhamadava Kunjabihari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Gopi Janavallabha Giribaradhari. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jamuna Tiravanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayaraja Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayaraja Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parvatakashayasa, Tathasutta Sri Srimad, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, verse number 30. Chapter 12 is the birth of Emperor Parikshit. So, can we make this a little bit lower? All right, that's good. That's good. So please repeat after me. Sa esha loke vikyataha. Sa esha loke vikyataha. Parikshit iti yat prabhu. Parikshit iti yat prabhu. Purvam drishtam anudyayan. Purvam drishtam anudyayan. Parikshita naresh iha. Parikshita nireshva iha. Saisha loke vikyataha. Parikshiditi yat prabhu. Purvam drishtam anudyayan. Parikshita narishviha. Saisha loke vikyataha. Parikshiditi yat prabhu. Purvam drishtam anudyayan. Parikshita narishviha. Sa esha loke vikyataha. Parikshiditi yat prabhu. Purvam drishtam anudyayan. Parikshita narishvaha. Others.
Yeah.
Please repeat after me. Saha.
Hi.
Eshaha. In this. Loke. World. Vikyataha. Famous. Parikshit. One who examines. Iti. Thus. Yat. What. Prabhu, O my King, Purvam, before, Drishtam, seen, Anudhyayan, constantly contemplating, Parikshita, shall examine, Nareshu, unto every man, Iha, here. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus he would come to constantly contemplate him. Please repeat after me. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus he would come to constantly contemplate him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. What is that music? Huh? Okay. Can they ask me to put it down a little bit lower? Parikshit Maharaj, fortunate as he was, got the impression of the Lord even in the womb of his mother. And thus his contemplation on the Lord was constantly with him. Once the impression of the transcendental form of the Lord is fixed in one's mind, one can never forget him in any circumstance. Child Parikshit, after coming out of the womb, was in the habit of examining everyone to see whether he was the same personality whom he first saw in the womb. But no one could be equal to or more attractive than the Lord, and therefore he never accepted anyone. But the Lord was constantly with him by such examination. And thus Maharaj Parikshit was always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord by remembrance. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord like Maharaj Parikshit. One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Parikshit to have the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother, but even if he is not so fortunate, he can be made so if the parents of the child desire him to be so. There's a practical example in my personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord. When I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a couple of forms of Radha and Krishna. In a playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister.
and I used to imitate the performances of a neighboring temple of Radha Govinda. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple and copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. My father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again I revived my old habit, and the same playful deities became my worshipful deities in proper regulation. This was followed up until I left the family connection, and I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impression, which was developed later, into regulative devotional service by His Divine Grace. Maharaj Prahlad also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the beginning of childhood. Otherwise, one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is very valuable, although it is temporary like others.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born into the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with which I have knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So Srila Prabhupada quotes how Jiva Goswami remarked in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord. Like Maharaj Parikshit. Of course, Srila Prabhupada also had the example in his own life. But I had one godbrother, Harishari Prabhu, that I matched his marriage. I chose the marriage date for him. And also, I chose the time for the Garbhadan Samskara for him. So they were in Koshikala. They did the Garbhadan Samskara. And they told me, his wife told me that the next day, they went to Radhakund. So she said when she walked into the temple in Radhakund, immediately at that moment she felt she became pregnant, because the particle of semen does not immediately, this pregnancy can take some time. So she felt immediately at that moment when she walked into the temple, at that moment she felt a soul had entered into her. So then later, sometime later, a few months later, we were all living together in Los Angeles. That we shared a flat, and she was pregnant. So what I suggested is to get the tape recorder. In those days, this is before MP3s. This is like 1991, 1992, 20 years ago. So get a tape recorder and just put it on your stomach. The mother is laying down in the evenings, sleeping. Put this tape recorder on your stomach and play the tapes to the child in the womb. You know, Prabhupada bhajan, Prabhupada lectures, everything. It's good to the mother. Mother hears it. Because whatever the mother meditates upon, that will be the form of the child. It says in the Shastras that the mother should be always looking at beautiful things, for the child will become beautiful. And if the child looks like the father, it means it's born from the heart of the father. And so many different things like that, you know. So specifically,
how the mother should behave. So many different practices mentioned in Ayurveda. Anyway, so she kept a tape recorder on her stomach for the whole of her pregnancy. Every day she was playing tapes to the child because the child can hear. And specifically, depending upon the medium, sound travels faster. Like if you stick your head under water and somebody slaps the water, the sound vibration will travel further. So when you're putting a tape recorder on your stomach, the child definitely hears it. And the mother can hear it. So then the child was born. Rasarani. They named the child Rasa. I said, according to the horoscope, the word Rani should be in her name. Because that's the way she is. She will be that way. So they named her Rasa. But this child, she almost died when she was young. The mother was crying. That she told me, is she going to live or not? She had double pneumonia, so many different diseases. And then they moved to India. And shortly after moving to India, the child almost died also in a car accident. The driver was reckless, and then the car went off the road. The child went flying out the door. Somehow it was a very precarious existence. But then this girl, she went on every parikram. Even though her health is not good, she had asthma. Every parikram, very dedicated. She's chanting at a young age, began chanting 16 rounds a day. Now she's initiated disciple of Indradumna Swami. They're going on a different, Polish world, all these Polish tours and all these different things. Completely dedicated devotee from childhood. Because they gave at a very young, while she was still in her womb of the mother, they were giving this sound vibration to the child. Hearing Prabhupada lectures, hearing Prabhupada chanting, like that. So this is very, true. Also, Harishore told me in the relationship to Srila Prabhupada, that one time he was giving Prabhupada a massage, and he noticed Prabhupada had a scar on his thigh, on the inside of his leg. And Harishore, what is that? What is this? So Prabhupada said, one time when he was about 3 or 4 years old, he got some matches. He stole up a box of matches. This is children, boys specifically. Girls maybe not, but boys definitely do that. I did it. Many boys do that. So he took the matches. He was sitting down and he's lighting the matches. It was just the big flame. He was so. And then he just would just throw the match down and then let it go and then take the next match and like that. He wasn't watching and the matches were falling on his pants, on his clothes. And then it just burst into flames. Because he threw so many matches, and is caught on fire. And his clothes are all burning up. And that moment, some man, unknown man, came, saw him, grabbed him, put the flames out and brought him to his home. So that was Krishna. That was Krishna. And then the man just disappeared, never showed up again. Never seen before, never seen again. But saved his life. He said, that was Krishna. Saved my life. And he has a scar to remind him. Like that, So from Srila Prabhupada's very beginning of his life, he was always, Krishna was always there protecting him in the background. And he's dedicated his whole life to propagating love of Krishna. What is the next temple? Okay. Some sound vibration. Yes, to get used to this. So his whole life was dedicated to propagating the person that he loved the most. Some people, many people, everybody else actually, they want to propagate themselves, right? They want to become popular. Politicians want to become popular. Everybody wants to be loved by everybody. So therefore, they will compromise. They'll do so many things so that you like them. They'll tell you lies. They'll do anything. But Srila Prabhupada was not trying to make himself popular. He was trying to make Krishna popular. Right? So therefore, he never compromised. He didn't have to compromise. Because he was not trying to, he didn't care if people liked him. He only cared if people liked Krishna. There's a big difference. Because if you don't care if people like you, then you don't have to compromise. You don't have to compromise your principles. Right?
Like I was listening to one lecture recently when Srila Prabhupada, he met the prince of the Catholic Church, the cardinal. He was in France in August 1974. Cardinal Benelou. But the first thing, when he met the cardinal, well, he didn't shake his hand. He didn't, you know, give him a hug. He didn't praise him or anything. He just said, I have a question. In the Bible it says, thou shalt not kill. Why is it that Christians, they keep so many slaughterhouses? Immediately came to, not a very diplomatic thing to say, but immediately got to the point. Prabhupada was very polite during the whole conversation, but immediately brought it to the point. Why do you keep slaughterhouses if the Bible says thou shalt not kill? Of course, the cardinal didn't have any answer to that. Perfect question, no answer. That was, you know. And the reason Prabhupada even asked this question was because the whole previous several weeks he had run into priests and Christians who were one of his disciples, the mother, and had come to see Prabhupada. She was very respectful. She called him father, but she was a Catholic. She brought a priest with her, trying to get the boy to leave the movement. You know, we weren't holding him back. He wasn't chained or anything. He didn't want to leave. But, you know, she was saying how, oh, he was studying to be a, you know, he was studying, don't you want your students also to go to school and be doctors and this and that? Rabbi said, well, there's already so many doctors. Why ours should become doctors? You know, we need preachers like that. And then they were talking about meat eating and this whole idea that animals don't have souls. So whenever you hear Srila Prabhupada speak about something, it's not like out of the blue. You know, when you hear, there's always something brings that point up. So while Prabhupada's life was dedicated to preaching, and yesterday was his we were celebrating his disappearance day, it's not that Srila Prabhupada, like some mundane person, you know, Alexander the Great or Napoleon, you know, dead and gone. There's a legacy, a very great legacy in the case of Srila Prabhupada, and it's an ongoing legacy because as a spiritual personality, it's not that the body disappears and that everything, and then now everything is over. Right? So in Srila Prabhupada's legacy, I was just thinking how the depending upon the country, has a different impact. Like in where I come from in North America, I'm from Canada, but in North America, United, you know, the whole West, any place outside of India. Of course, since maybe Japan and China be a little bit different. But outside of India, we're more European-oriented, North America, South America, Western Europe. When I was a child, before Prabhupada came, you could say the West before and after Prabhupada. Before Prabhupada came, no one under the concept of reincarnation was completely alien. I remember the first time I heard, I saw this one movie, it was talking about reincarnation. Like, you never saw movies about reincarnation. It was some television. Like, I just could not understand this concept of you actually have another body. I had a different body then. This was so bizarre. And nobody talked about reincarnation. It was like nobody accepted it. Nobody heard of it before. But now, everybody's heard of reincarnation. Everybody accepts reincarnation, unless you're some very rigid Christians. Christians, Muslims, they'll reject this concept. But most people will accept it. You know, 80%. Or a place like Poland, which is a very staunch Catholic country, before Indradumna Swami started preaching there, you know, disciple of Prabhupada, nobody accepted reincarnation. Now, they did recent polls, you know, approximately 50% of the people accept reincarnation in a very staunch Catholic country. This is the effect of Srila Prabhupada. Or, you know, when I was growing up, vegetarians, that was maybe if you had some serious illness, the doctor might tell you. Like Adolf Hitler, who was a vegetarian, because the doctor said he had a stomach problem. The doctor said you should not eat meat. Not because he was a pacifist, we know he wasn't. He was a mass murderer, you know, warmonger. But he was a vegetarian because he had a stomach problem. So that was the only kind of people who were vegetarians then. You know. But now, not that we promote vegetarianism, but we promote distribution of prasadam, which happens to be vegetarian. And so this has had a very big impact, you know, a big increase in interest in this. You know, where people, you know, this is like a side effect. There's a whole group called PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They, you know, they attack, you know, the animal slaughter, you know, cow protection. They're very much into cow protection, all kinds of different things like that. It's just a side effect. This would never have happened. Knowledge of this wouldn't have happened, you know, if Prabhupada had not come. You know, our distribution, mass distribution of books. Anybody saw that movie Avatar? Came out about 2 years ago. You know why the people were blue? You know why? Because the director was inspired by Krishna that they should be blue, because the Indian god is blue. So he made, even though he's an atheist, he claims to be an atheist. Most Western atheists, they're reacting to Christianity, but he was inspired. He made all the people blue because of Krishna. Where did he hear about Krishna from? Because of Prabhupada. Is it just so it's a cultural thing. Not that everybody became devotee, but the impact. Srila Prabhupada often said that not that we have to make everybody a devotee. No. Just that 1% of the population becomes Vaishnavas, it will have the rest will be influenced. Like if you take a stick of incense, you light it in this room, the whole room becomes fragrant. Not that you have to have, you know, every cubic centimeter with incense. Just one stick is enough. The whole room becomes fragrant. And then because the cultural impact will be there. Specifically if it's a very superior cultural. Like, you know, everybody follows Brahminical culture, even though Brahmins are a very small percentage of the community. You know, for example, the cleanliness after going to the toilet, we clean ourselves in a certain way. That's because that's the way Brahmins clean. So then everybody else follows that, because that standard, even though they may not be Brahmins. So just 1%. If you can make 1% into devotees, then have a very powerful impact. So what to speak of 1%, we were only a very tiny amount when Srila Prabhupada was in the planet, very small. Prabhupada had maybe 5,000 disciples in the whole world. Yet the impact, you know, specifically of his books, these books are in fact specifically Bhagavatam, you know, it is Krishna himself. Because they asked, what will we do now that Krishna has left? So he said, the Bhagavatam will give light. The Bhagavatam will give light. And you know, Bhagavad Gita also. So all these books are not different from Krishna because they describe Krishna. So can you please ask them not to talk over there? They're speaking. Huh? No, ask them to not to make too much noise. So, one time Srila Prabhupada was saying how, you know, a disciple comes to Guru Puja and he does some, you know, eulogizes the Guru and then that's it. You know, so it's, you know, it's one thing. Of course, it's nice to eulogize a guru, but more important is what we do on the other days. Right? Not just on that one day we come, We do some pranam, we say some nice word, and then we go away and we don't do anything else. It's all nonsense. So the real eulogy is how we serve the Guru, how we bring glory to the Guru. When one of my teachers, my astrology teachers, he was a Vaishnava, and he made the point that the duty of the disciple is to bring glory to his guru. Right? To bring glory to his guru. As I was just hearing Srila Prabhupada say today when I was getting ready, that everybody becomes envious if somebody becomes superior to him. They advance more. Except the father and the guru. The parents want their children to become more, and the guru also, he wants that the disciples advance. He's not envious. He hopes, he's praying, he's desiring. The whole purpose that he came is to make the disciple advance. In fact, even in the case of the Dhruva Maharaj and Suniti, that because Dhruva Maharaj didn't want to leave, even though the Vaikuntha Vimana came, the Vaikuntha Dutas, the Vishnu Dutas came, that he didn't want to go. He felt bad because his mother was the one who told him to go worship Vishnu. So he didn't want to go. But then he saw that a separate plane came for her. She also went to Vaikuntha. So Prabhupada commented that because her son became such a great devotee on her account, therefore she also went to Vaikuntha. So Prabhupada was saying that this is the glory of a guru, that he was praying that even some of his disciples can take him back to Godhead. Prabhupada is so humble that some of his disciples will be so glorious that they will bring him back to Godhead. He's so, he's thinking he doesn't have enough power on his own. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that his disciples, his grand disciples, in ISKCON, different people have different Diksha Gurus, but everybody has the same Shiksha Guru, right? Srila Prabhupada. He is all of our Shiksha Gurus. So, it's important for us then to get Shiksha from Srila Prabhupada and to fulfill his mission. That's what really pleases the spiritual master. That's what Srila Prabhupada dedicated his whole life to, as he mentioned in his book, in his purport, that later when he met Bhaktisiddhanta, then he dedicated his life to fulfilling the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta. He came to the West. Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to come to come to the West and preach. But what was Prabhupada's mission? Right? Do we know where Prabhupada's mission was? We have a partial understanding. We have to find out what Prabhupada's mission is. Then we can, with intelligence, fulfill that mission. We saw Prabhupada come. We didn't always know exactly what he was doing or why he was doing it. But if we want to understand what Prabhupada's mission was, then we have to understand what Bhaktisiddhanta's mission was. Because Bhaktisiddhanta is the one who sent him, right? If we want to know what Prabhupada was trying to do, then we have to know what was the man who sent him was trying to accomplish. Then we'll know what Prabhupada was trying to do. Then we'll know what we're supposed to be doing. Otherwise, if we just see in the middle what somebody is doing, then we don't know what their objective is, then we may make a mistake. Like the story of the foolish disciples. So one time, this guru had many disciples, and he wanted to go down to the Ganga, take a bath. So he took his clothes off, and he had all his valuables, tied them in a little bag. Right? He dug a hole in the sand, and he stuck the bag there, and he buried it. And he took a twig, a branch, and he stuck it in. Now he knows where his valuables are. And he went in the Ganga. So now all his disciples are saying, "Oh, look what Guruji did. Yeah.
So we also do the same thing. So they all dug a hole, you know, and then they stuck a twig there. And then when Guru came out of the water, he saw a whole bank with twigs. And he didn't know where his possessions are. You know, they didn't understand why he was doing what he was doing. They didn't know what his objective was. They didn't know what his purpose was. They just thought, oh, that's what he's doing. We'll also do that. And instead, by doing that, they made a big... They ruined his whole objective. So unless we know what Prabhupada is trying to do, we may actually, instead of fulfilling his mission, we may destroy his mission. Right? That's why it's better to have a wise man for an enemy than a fool for a friend, according to Panchatantra. Everybody knows that story? The wise man for an enemy? It's a short story. I'll make it short. The son of the king was having an argument with his father. And also his friend was the son of the chief minister, and the other son was the son of the finance minister. So they all had arguments with their father. They decided to leave the kingdom. You know, so the finance minister said, well, my father told me that there's a huge treasure buried in the jungle. We'll go there, we'll collect it, then the minister's son, he can use that money and negotiate, get some allies, and then the king's son, we can go with that army and we'll take over the kingdom. Right? That was their plan. So that while they were going in the jungle, one dacoit saw them. And he saw that they had money, all these jewels. And that they saw that they had, when they found the jewels, they took the jewels and they swallowed them. So that nobody, if they came, somebody would see they had any jewels. So he thought, let me follow them, I'll become friends with them, and then while they're sleeping, I'll kill them and pull the jewels out of their stomach and I'll have all the money. So he said, he met them, he said, it's dangerous to walk in the jungle. So there's unity, there's a strength in unity, so let me be with you and then we'll all be protected. Like that. But then as they were walking, they went near a dacoit village. And the dacoits had a mystical parrot who could tell that there was treasure was there. So he said, he started making all kinds of sounds. The dacoits immediately saw that these people must have money. But they searched them, there was nothing there. So then, they let them go. But again, it went by the parrot. The parrot again started making noise. So then they searched again. Didn't find any. Then the third time, then the dacoit chief said, you must have swallowed. You must have swallowed. That's why we can't find anything on you. So, tomorrow, we're going to kill you. We'll open your stomachs, then we'll see if there's anything in there. So then the dacoit who was traveling with the boys was thinking, if he kills one of them, and he finds jewels, he's not going to believe me that I don't have any. He's going to kill me anyway. So I lived my whole life has always been full of crime and so many terrible, sinful things I've done. At least not before I die, I should do something good. So he went to the dacoit king and said, you know, these boys are my friends. They've been so nice. You know, I don't want to see them die. So you kill me first. You'll see, we have nothing with us. And this way he sacrificed himself. So they killed him. They found there's nothing inside. So they let them all go. Again, of course, the parrot started making noise. They just killed that parrot. They're just making noise for nothing. And then the boys went home. Right. So he was a wise enemy. They have a wise man for an enemy. So then they went home. And they sold the jewels, raised an army, and they took over the kingdom. But now this king, for a servant, he had a big ape, a big monkey. And he was, one day they were, him and his wives, they were in the gardens and they were resting and he was sleeping. And the ape was there and one fly was buzzing. And so the ape, he took a sword,
The monkey, like I said, was trying to hit the fly.
And one time, the fly landed on the king's head. And he took the sword and he got the fly and killed the king. So, that's why it said, better to have a wise man for an enemy than fool for a friend. Like that.
So we don't want to be foolish disciples. We should find out what the mission of Prabhupada is, because it's an ongoing mission. So one time Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was praying to Lord Jagannath, you know, that so many things are wrong. Because when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at his time, to be a Vaishnava in Bengal was considered an insult. To call somebody that they were a Vaishnava was, that's an insult. Because the Vaishnavas were very degraded because of Sahajism. There was, you know, all kinds of nefarious activities with women and, you know, so many different things. It was, you know, the Vaishnavism was like the lowest grade. You insulted somebody by calling them a Vaishnava. And he couldn't even find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was very degraded. So with great effort, with great difficulty, Bhaktivinoda Thakur began with his life work was to resuscitate Gaudiya Vaishnavism to something which was on a respectable, honorable thing. So he was praying to Lord Jagannath. And Lord Jagannath said, he said, you should do all these different things. He said, I can't do that. I'm too old. So you said to Jagannath, you please send your secretary, you send your assistant here to do that. So then, Bhaktisiddhanta was born. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that Lord Chaitanya sent Bhaktisiddhanta to accomplish two missions, two purposes. One was to establish the pure chanting of the holy name. Two was to establish Daivi Varnashram. Because the chanting of the holy name became impure, because shortly after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, you know, at the time of Lord Chaitanya, Gaudiya Vaishnavas were practicing Varnashram. He was a sannyasi. They had so many sannyasis who were the associates of Lord Chaitanya, Brahmananda Bharati. There was quite a few, about half a dozen or a dozen sannyasis, grihasthas. Everybody was following, you know, there was a brahmachari, Nrisinga Brahmachari. People were following Varnashram, like other Vaishnavas, like in South India, Madhva, Sri Vaishnava, they follow Varnashram. But shortly after him, after he left, then the Varnashram culture amongst the Vaishnavas left. They had these Babajis. They think they were above Varnashram. You know, they're just chanting the holy name. And because Maya, you know, is at war, things became corrupted. And the holy name became corrupted. You know, not that the people who were doing it, they were, you know, degraded. Sahajyas. Like this one, Bhaktisiddhanta tells one story. Dayaram tells the story very well. I'll try to tell the story, describing what these are. So in this one village, they wanted to have a Sankirtan Mela, you know, to show that they had real bhakti. So there was two competing groups in the village. So one group hired this one famous kirtan party and said, you should show your bhav, you know, your ecstasy. So they did. They did their kirtan. Of course, there's the ones who were smoking bidis, and they have so many girlfriends. And that. So anyway, after the chanting, and they were crying and everything, and then in the bhava, the kirtan, he fell on the ground and was unconscious. You know, in his ecstasy, love of God, and he was there for 1 hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, laying on the ground in his ecstasy, and then he regained his consciousness, and then he, you know, oh, such a ecstatic devotee, you know, such great bhav he has, such great love, you know. So the others, you know, the other party was, you know, well, we have to outdo these people, you know. So they also organized,
their own. But when the other people had done it in the winter time, so now they organized their bab, their festival. It was now in April, which in Bengal is a very hot season. So then they, this kirtan party, they came. They, of course, they're hired. They pay them, you know. So then this kirtan wallahs, they were doing the kirtan, and then after the, at the appointed time, he also fainted in his ecstasy, his bab, and he landed on the ground, and he was laying there. But because it's April in Bengal, not January in Bengal, but April in Bengal, it's very hot, and it, everywhere in India is very hot, right? He's laying in the sun, so after 1 hour only, he got up, not 6 hours, because it's baking hot. And so then everybody said, "What is this?" After he was in Baba for 6 hours, and you only for 1 hour. Says, "How much Baba do you want for 25 rupees anyway?" So this is the sahaja. He's paying him. You know, this is not how much Baba do you want for 25 rupees. So. So this. That is why the chanting of the holy name became taken up by people who were unscrupulous. They weren't following any type of Vedic culture. You know, so many apasampradayas, bolas, this, you know, the Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a whole book about the different Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktisiddhanta, I can't remember, all the different varieties, Garanga Nagaris, bolas, all these different apasampradayas which are found in Bengal and Orisha. Because they weren't following traditional Vedic culture. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he came to South India. He came to South India. He learned. He went to Sri Perumbador, the birthplace of Ramanuja, and he learned from the Sri Sampradaya, the sannyasis, the whole ritual for sannyas. And so he learned in Sri Perumbador, and he went to different parts of South India. With the different Vaishnavacharyas, they were, who all followed Varnashram, as it is applicable to Vaishnavas, because like in the Varnashram, the codes are like in Manu, but not everything may be applicable to Vaishnava. Just like in the law books, there are so many laws. Some laws may not be applicable to you. For example, you know, the people who have lorries, they have to follow certain laws. But if you don't have a lorry, that's not a law you have to be concerned with. So as Vaishnavas, there are certain things which we don't have to be concerned with. Those are additional things for Karmakandis. So whatever was applicable to Vaishnavas, he incorporated these things. And he, so when he started the Gaudiya Math, you know, he introduced sannyas. He took sannyas himself. They had brahmacharis. You know, that was, you don't find, you know, that with any other Gaudiya Sampradaya, brahmacharis, sannyasis, only in the Gaudiya Math. Two, because to bring purity, because yeah? Purity is the force, right? Books are the basis, purity is the force. But these others, so-called Vaishnavas, they didn't have any purity, totally degraded. That's why that was one of the reasons that Prabhupada did not want to go see Bhaktisiddhanta in the first place. His friends were saying, "Let's go see this sadhu." I don't want to go. Why? Because when Prabhupada was young, his father would invite every day some sadhus to the home. And Prabhupada saw them. Because Prabhupada said his father was very liberal. One time Prabhupada, he was saying how he escorted his father one time to deliver a bag of ganja to one sadhu. You know, because this is Bhaktisiddhanta. He is the one who introduced this no intoxication. But his father was very, he was hand delivering a bag of ganja to the sadhu. So that's why, that's the kind of sadhus that Prabhupada would see come to his house. He was not impressed. His father was very, you know, because that was considered the social norm right there. So, and his father was liberal like that. But from Bhaktisiddhanta, he learned that no, sadhus do not take ganja or opium. It's not, or they don't drink a brandy or things like that. So from Bhaktisiddhanta, purity is the, you know, is the force. So because Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, from studying shastras and going to places in other parts of India where the Vaishnavas, you know, if you say you're a Vaishnava in South India, that's not an insult, right? That's highly respectable. Sri Vaishnavas, Madhvas, highly respectable, because they still follow the traditional Vedic culture of Varnashram. So he reintroduced that, because together, you know, that's how the name, the Holy Land, became degraded, because people who were not following the culture properly. So both were important. Just following Varnashram in itself, that's why there's Varnashram and Daivi Varnashram. There's two different things. Krishna explains the Gita. In the Gita is an explanation of Daivi Varnashram. Somebody is speaking over. Can you please have your conversation outside? The sound carries. The Bhagavad Gita is Krishna explaining Daivi Varnashram to Arjuna. Because Arjuna, first of all, he was following Varnashram. He was a warrior, right? So there's the Chatur Purusharthas, huh? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So he was performing his dharma as a Kshatriya. But where was the Artha? I'm going to kill all my family? What Artha is there? So he didn't want to do it, because everybody will be killed. I won't have any pleasure. There will be no Artha, and what to speak of Kama? Everybody's dead. Those who I will want to, they'll all be gone. So then Krishna had to change the program. Now you don't perform your dharma for Artha, what to speak of Kama. You perform your dharma for moksha. Now when we say moksha, we don't mean Advaitic moksha. We mean moksha, meaning getting off the bodily platform of life. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati. This is means moksha. So you perform dharma for moksha to achieve bhakti. So therefore Krishna explained to him, now you do your prescribed duty to please me. Right? And that's bhakti. That's it. Because in the 18th chapter of the Gita, Krishna very succinctly explains Varnashram, and then he says, now I will explain how anybody can become perfect by doing their prescribed duties. Just by doing your prescribed duties to please me, you will achieve perfection. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should consider that everybody is employed by Hrishikesh. That Krishna is your employer and you're working for him. Whatever job you may have. And then you'll achieve perfection. Because Krishna, you're actually working for Krishna. So a mother, you know, a mother, she's cooking. She's thinking, I'm cooking. I'm going to cook the best I can. Take care of my children the best I can for Krishna. So that Krishna is happy. Doing it to please Krishna. You know, change those diapers to please Krishna. Not because, but to please Krishna, I will do it. Maybe the husband is giving you a hard time, but you don't serve the husband to please him. You're serving to please Krishna. This will make a lot of difficult things a lot easier. It's like Arjuna. To please Krishna, he killed everybody. He begged his grandfather, how do we kill you? Bhima, the Bhishma Dev. He loved his grandfather. His grandfather loved him. But he begged, because of Krishna, he begged, how do we kill you? He loved his guru. But to please Krishna, they killed him. Killed Karna. Of course. But even Karna was a tragic hero. People think Karna was, you know, evil. But when Krishna came from Upaplavya to Hastinapur, just before he left, he had a secret conversation with Karna. And Karna revealed that he knew that he was the oldest son of Kunti. He knew that he should be king. But But he had they would make him king. They would make Karna the king. Yudhishthira would give the crown to Karna. But he said, no, I have already given my word to Duryodhan, but Yudhishthira should be king. And he apologized to Krishna, please, I apologize for what I did to Draupadi. You know, but he, in other words, he knew that because he had given his word to Krishna, to Duryodhan, but Yudhishthira should be, had to be king. Therefore, he had that Karna must be killed, because Karna was what stood in the way. So he purposely allowed himself to be killed. Otherwise, Duryodhan would become the king. But Yudhishthira, he said, Yudhishthira should be the king. So even Karna was favorable to Yudhishthira. You know, and every morning, Drona and Bhishma Dev would do prayers, hoping for Yudhishthira's victory. And then they go out and try to kill Yudhishthira. Like that. So the whole of the Gita is Krishna teaching Daivi Varnashram how to perform your duty to please him. Because then we come to this verse. The most misunderstood verse in the whole Bhagavad Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityagya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Ahang Tvang Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yashami Masuchaha. That is the most misunderstood verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Because people will say, well, Krishna says you should do your prescribed duties, you know, in the third chapter. You know, like I said, forget about that, Prabhu. Sarva Dharman Parityagya. That, you know, you don't have to do any of these duties, just surrender to Krishna. You know, people say that. People do say this. I've heard this many times. But that's because they misunderstood. The whole, what this Krishna is saying is that you don't perform your duties for any material reason, you do it for me. You don't do it for any cheating purpose. Because he just a few verses before, he's explaining Daivi Varnashram. The whole Bhagavad Gita is this way. But they'll say, no, you can forget about all these things, you know, Stri Dharma, Grihastha Dharma. Just surrender to Krishna and do your duty. You know, surrender to him. That's why it's the most misunderstood. Because in the very next, in the Srimad Bhagavatam here, the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, the second verse is that this is for, let's see, what does it say here? The second verse. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmapsaranam satam. Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapa trayon mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate maha muni krite kim na vapare rishwaraha sadyo hridya avarudyate tra kritibir shushrushubish tat kshanat. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. So this is what he means. So that's what Krishna means in 1866. You know, Charama Shloka, Sarva Dhamma Parityagya, means completely rejecting religious activities which are materially motivated. So that's like Arjuna, his religious activities were materially motivated. He was performing his duties, you know, but then when he saw that he was not going to get a good material reaction, he didn't want to do his duties. So Krishna's rejecting that. And then later on, in the same first chapter of the Gita, I don't remember the exact verse, and I don't want to look for it. Later on, in the first canto, in the first or second chapter, Vyasadeva explains that one should not perform dharma for artha or kama, only for moksha and bhakti. So that's what Krishna means by sarva dharma parityagya. We are performing our dharma to get off the material platform of life in order to achieve bhakti. Not for any other, not for artha or kama. So that's what Bhakti Siddhanta wanted to establish. This is Daivi Varnashram. And this helps to keep the holy name pure. They work both together. It keeps the holy name pure, and by chanting the holy name, we're also inspired to in our Daivi Varnashra. We get together, do a kirtan, you know, there's nothing crazy going on. You know, after the kirtan, leader goes with some just 25 girlfriends. That's what happened to Narada Muni before, you know, that's how he got cursed. He had he was a fantastic singer in Gandharva Loka. They're having a big Sankirtan festival, and instead he's singing to all his girlfriends. He got cursed that way. So these type of things go on. So, by the way, what? How long does the class go for?
10 more minutes.
Okay. All right. So Srila Prabhupada set up ISKCON to fulfill this mission. You know, specifically at first, he just established the chanting of the holy name, but then towards the end of his life, he began to really push Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram. So these are his goals, because he's carrying on the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta, to establish a pure chanting of the holy name and Daivi Varnashram. And this, you know, that's done through the propagating of, you know, book distribution, kirtan, establishing temples. These are all the different things that Srila Prabhupada did. You know, 108 temples in his life. He initiated so many disciples, like that. So ISKCON is meant to fulfill this desire of the Guru Parampara. It's an institution, but the institution, we don't serve the institution. The institution is meant to serve the Guru Parampara. There's a distinction. Like, I didn't get initiated into ISKCON. I was initiated into the Guru Parampara. Anybody initiated? Who's initiated here? Who's initiated? Everybody's initiated, put their hands up. Okay. So when we get initiated, we have a guru, a Diksha Guru, Shiksha Gurus. So we're initiated. It doesn't say, you know, like in the Bhagavad Gita, that the disciplic succession, it doesn't say, you know, Gaudiya Math, or it doesn't say ISKCON. There's a person is there. So these are the Guru Paramparas there. So then that person sets up an institution which is meant to serve the purpose. So we have to always remember our loyalty is to the Parampara, because institutions, things happen to them. They may go off. That's what happened to the Gaudiya Math. It went off. So many histories of institutions going off. So as long as the institution is serving the purpose of the Parampara, it flourishes. And then eventually things deteriorate and something new has to come. Krishna himself says that in 4th chapter Bhagavad Gita, verse 2, Evam Paramparam Praptam Imam Rajashayo Vidu Sakalina Mahata Yoganashta Parantapa. What to speak of the institution, even sometimes the Guru Parampara becomes dead and he has to come and re-establish it. We shouldn't be surprised. Don't be shocked. You know, don't be surprised at these things. Of course, I was surprised when I saw it happen, but we shouldn't be surprised, because it's Krishna already says this is what will happen. The nature of the material world. We are at war with Maya. So Maya is not just standing there. She's also shooting back. You know, she has a good aim. So that's what... So we have to... So Prabhupada's mission... if we want to really eulogize, we want to really please Srila Prabhupada, then his mission is to revive Krishna's Vedic civilization. Right? That is what his mission is. Krishna's Vedic civilization teaches us how to live in this world with the objective of leaving it. That's the whole mission of Krishna consciousness. How to live in the world with the mission, with the purpose of leaving the world. Right? It's a whole science. So I'm going to leave these So if we want to really become understand Srila Prabhupada's mission, then first of all we should read his books. How many people here have read Gita? Raise your hands. Bhagavad Gita. Hi. I can't see them. Alright, that's pretty good. A lot more on this side, I noticed. Not so many on that side. Ladies, you should be reading more. Okay, now how many people have read Srimad Bhagavatam? The complete Bhagavatam? No one? Oh, I know that Varada Krishna read the whole Bhagavatam. How come your hand is not up? Okay, one hand. Okay. How many people read the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Two. Like I just heard Prabhupada say, I didn't write these books for you to sell them. I wrote these books for you to read them. So how will we fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission if we don't read his books? If we don't know what's in the books? That's the illusion that is created when you're in an institution. You think somebody else is going to do it. But that's what it means when you are a disciple. It means it's your responsibility. You have to do it. You have to learn it because the next generation is going to learn it from you. And if you haven't learned anything, what are you going to give them? What have you got to give? Unless you've actually read all these things. Imbibe the knowledge. That is the danger of being in an institution, because you think someone else is going to do it. The institution will do it. But the institution is made up of people. And if they are not doing it, then the institution fails. You know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the Gaudiya Mutt, if you read the Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, each temple was like an academic center of Vaishnava learning, you know, of Vedic learning. Very serious study of the Shastras. He got one Sri Vaishnava Pandit and a Madhva from the Madhva Sampradaya. He imported them to Navadvip, to Mayapur, and they stayed there for 2 or 3 years just teaching his disciples how to attack Mayavad from different angles. Vaishnava philosophy. Now, they were very learned. Like I was mentioning to one devotee yesterday, that they were so, because he heads up the student preaching, we're so much interested in making new devotees, but what about our devotees who we make? So we want to make students into devotees, but we should make the devotees into students. Right? So first thing, and I'm sure everybody has a set of these books at home, and they're gathering dust. Right? Gathering dust. So take the dust off the books and start reading at least 1 hour a day. Somehow or other. 1 hour a day. Find the time. Make the time. Turn off your television. Sell your television. Buy some books. Then, also, we made available, this is Prabhupada Vakya. This is a complete collection of all of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, morning walk conversations, room conversations, everything Srila Prabhupada spoke. It's about 1500 hours or more of Srila Prabhupada speaking. You know, when before they were only available as cassette tapes, cost $2,000. 60 booklets with 16 tapes in it, took a whole bookshelf. I bought in 1998. I got a small inheritance. I spent the money on that. Now we're at the Jagannath Temple in Shishadripuram selling them for 200 rupees compared to 1 lakh. Right? All you need to do is get a small MP3 player. You know, you put them on your computer, transfer them to your MP3 player, you get a small external speaker, and you just carry it around with you everywhere, and you can listen at least 1 lecture a day, minimum. When I had the tapes, I had a tape recorder in every room. As soon as I woke up, I press the button. You know, I'm making my bed up. It wakes you up because you listen to Prabhupada speaking. It, very quickly you're awake. Then I turn that off, I go into the bathroom, I press the next button. And I'm listening to another lecture. I turn that off, go back into my bedroom, and press the button to get dressed. Turn it off, go into the kitchen, press another button, and I take prasadam while I'm listening. And this way you can listen. So now what's even easier, with the MP3 player, you can carry wherever you go. You can listen to minimum one a day, more like two or three a day. Listening directly to Srila Prabhupada speaking. And Srila Prabhupada speaking is very potent. One time in 1991, I had to move. I had to leave my flat I was living. So I had to pack at a deadline. So for about 10 days, I was just packing. As soon as I woke up, till when I went to bed, no chanting, because I had a deadline. So, but I was listening every day, just continuously listening to lectures. So normally if I don't chant my japa, I don't feel good. But I was thinking to myself, why do I feel so good? At that very minute, on the tape I was listening to, Prabhupada said, because the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. At that very second, as I was thinking that thought, then Prabhupada said those words. Because the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. So these are mystical. It's a mystical process. It's a mystical process. So they're going to start. They haven't got them now, but the temple here will also make these available, as well as this. This is a series of lectures on the Pancharatra Pradipika by His Holiness Bhaktivedya Purna Swami, a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Bhakti Vidya Purna. He lives up to, anybody knows him? He lives up to his name, Bhakti Vidya Purna. It's a very wonderful series of lectures. You can alternate between Srila Prabhupada and him, teaching us the science of, you know, interrelating between Bhagavad Dharma, Pancharatrika Dharma, and Varnashram. Applicable to everybody, even new devotees, uninitiated. You know, how to prepare yourself to enter into the spiritual world. We mentioned a Varnashram. Varnashram is created by Krishna because that's what he does. Krishna follows Varnashram. In the Goloka Vrindavan, they follow Varnashram. That's because he likes that. That's the culture he follows. He has his own taste. He has his own way of dealing. So if we want to enter into Krishna's social circle, how do you think we should act? We should learn his etiquette, the way he deals, and then he'll feel comfortable to have us with him. But if we don't know how to deal properly, then we'll stick out like a sore thumb in his social circle. So this gives a very essential knowledge to prepare us to enter in Lord Krishna's spiritual realm. That's what it is. So, I'll come to an end now. If anybody has any questions or comments or criticisms, I don't see any hands. All right. Jai all goes to Srila Prabhupada.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Let's see how this goes this time.